What is going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Ant and Big Red versus the World. As always, I'm Big Red.
And of course, I'm still Average Ant.
And once again, it's a little bit of a slow week, not a ton of news, but we got a few big stories that kind of broke out, and then a few little speculative pieces we'll talk on. Ant, you want to tell us a little bit more about what we're going to get into today?
Yeah, so for those who aren't big into baseball, this is kind of a downish kind of episode for you because the biggest news breaking out this week was Manny Machado signing with the Padres, which is what we will be getting into, and some AAF action as well. They're an honorable mention a few episodes ago, so we're upgrading them to a full segment now. So they're on the menu, and of course, we got some honorable mentions and some ballers and busts too.
Yeah, it should be a good, well-rounded episode, and honorable mention a few weeks ago, not as fun of a segment for the AAF to make it on the show this time around, but we'll get into that a little bit later. So right off the bat, we'll rip into the biggest news of the week, pretty much by far, is Manny Machado reportedly signed a 10-year reportedly agreed to a 10-year $300 million contract with the San Diego Padres. Now, to preface this a little bit, supposedly the deal is not complete. No physicals have happened or taken place, so it's not official. And the Padres GM said that they're in discussions still. But essentially, it's a done deal. There's probably a few T's to cross and I's to dot and kind of iron it out. But I mean, as of right now, Manny Machado is pretty much set up to be a San Diego Padre after just signing the largest free agent contract in American sports history. And kind of what's your first take reaction?
Yeah, so my first thoughts were kind of like weird flex, but okay, I guess. I wasn't necessarily expecting him to sign with the Padres at all. My initial thoughts were kind of, I mean, no other reason he'd choose San Diego other than money, pretty much. I guess they're able to offer the most. I know the White Sox had offered around like 250 mil, something like that, and they weren't willing to go higher and match 300 or even go over that. So I guess that's kind of what led him to San Diego, and that's kind of my initial thoughts on that. Another side piece, maybe something we can get into later on in the segment, is I was thinking maybe this has the possibility to kind of end up as an Andrew Wiggins type situation where like this player gets a ton of money and then they're kind of just like, well, I got the money. I don't need to do anything else, which the only reason why I think that is because of Machado's kind of personality and I guess reputation of being lazy, I guess, or not hustling and not caring. So, I mean, those were, I guess, my initial thoughts kind of wrapped up right there.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. The first thing I'll touch on off that is you said the White Sox were up around $250 million, which is correct. Supposedly after the news broke, the White Sox officials said the level wasn't feasible to us because we're projecting to put together a total winning roster and keeping the young players that will earn into great dollar investments themselves. Basically, saying that the Padres gave them more than they were willing to offer. Supposedly that $250 million deal was over 8 years and had incentives and vesting options that would have sent it over 300. So again, on that kind of Andrew Wiggins note, Machado went for the deal that had the more guaranteed money, whereas the White Sox might have had more total money in their contract, but Machado wanted that easy money to say, per se. Yeah, it was definitely a little bit surprising for me. I didn't think Machado would be choosing the Padres. I think first and foremost it was a money thing, but in that same breath, if you look at the Padres, they have a pretty exciting next few years coming up. They've been ranked the number one farm system in baseball the last 2 years by MLB.com and Bleacher Report. So two different sources basically saying they have the best farm system in baseball. With Machado in the fold, who, yes, we can get into this Andrew Wiggins talk Machado comparison a little here in a sec. Andrew Wiggins was decent, had a lot of potential, signed that big contract, and kind of basically it blew up in the Timberwolves' face because they had a guy that didn't try super hard on defense. That was pretty much his most glaring flaw besides his lack of an elite jump shooter was that you just kind of you saw lapses in effort from Andrew Wiggins, and it was kind of like a, how committed is this guy to basketball? Machado, in some sense, yes, his off-field antics are similar in that give you that kind of pause of, I'm really gonna give this guy $300 million, and just hope that his screw offs and things don't affect my team's chemistry, my roster's compatibility, and he's gonna keep playing hard, even though he's already told the entire world that he's a guy that doesn't hustle. It's tough, but in that same breath, Machado is also one of the best players in baseball in the last few years. Last season combined between Baltimore and LAD, he finished with a .297 batting average, career high in RBIs 107, and tied his career highs in homers with 37. So he's 26 years old. He's in his prime. He has MVP level talent. So that's kind of where I think that big difference between Wiggins and Machado is that Machado's kind of already an established elite player, whereas the hope with Wiggins was he has elite level talent, elite level potential. And then, like you said, he got paid and just, meh.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can. I mean, I understand that he's a already an established superstar. I mean, he is my favorite player for a good chunk of his Baltimore times, and he's still only 26. And you said he's in his prime. I mean, there's an argument that he's not even in his prime yet; that he's just at the
Fair.
tail beginning of it. And I mean, that's crazy to think about. I mean, a 297, 37 homer, 107 RBIs being just outside of the beginning of your prime is crazy to think about. So kind of what made me reconsider my like initial thoughts on the Andrew Wiggins kind of situation, and he's just there because his guaranteed money and stuff was the farm system that the Padres have, like you said, ranked number one by multiple sources. It's and he, be, him be, only being 26, signing a 10-year deal. He'll be 36 when it's over. I mean, in 10 years, all the talent that the Padres have will have already either fizzled out or reached the potential that it's suspected to reach. I mean, the biggest piece of that is probably Fernando Tatis Jr., who is a shortstop, I believe. But I mean, Machado kind of being there, getting 300 mil, he's probably going to want to play some shortstop. So that kind of bumps him over to third base. But I mean, he's expected to probably come up at some point during the season. So that gives the Padres and a close to elite, depending on how Tatis does, close to elite or elite left side of the infield. So, I mean, I'm not sure if Machado kind of thought that far into it or any further than I'm just gonna get $300 million and whatever happens, happens. I'm not sure if he thought about it in terms of what's it gonna be like in 5 years when these players in the farm system develop and reach the major leagues. I'm not sure if he thought that far, but it's definitely it looks like a chess move, even if it's accidentally, in my opinion.
Yeah, 100%. I last thing I'll kind of say, and on the Wiggins risk factor deal before I jump into how excited I am for the Padres, it's this is kind of my flat out opinion overall of the whole move is this deal either accelerates the Padres rebuild into championship caliber, or it becomes a huge bust. And Machado either opts out of his contract after 5 years, which is a vesting, which is in there. Machado supposedly has an out after 5 years, so he can leave. And at 31 years old, probably sign another monster contract. Definitely not 10-year range, but Cano left about the same time and signed a 10-year, $240 million deal with the Mariners. So it's totally feasible that he opts out and leaves, even if he dominates and maybe the Padres' youth doesn't catch up around him. But I think worst case scenario, Machado underperforms exactly like you're semi worried about. I'm semi worried about myself just because it's a monster deal. How do you not think about it? Look at the other ones in the past. Albert Pujols ended up being a terrible deal. Cano just,
Yeah, that one was bad.
yeah, and Cano just got traded with arguably the best pitching prospect the Mariners have brought up since Felix and Edwin Diaz just to dump Cano's contract. So, I mean, they don't seem to age well. The difference is Machado's 26, but say he underperforms, doesn't match anywhere near the level of his contract, even 2, 3 years down the line. If Machado's hitting 260, hits maybe 30 bombs, 5th year rolls around, what's Machado gonna do? He's going to opt into that
Yeah,
10 years.
he's pulling a Melo or something on that.
Exactly. And so that's my kind of bold line statement, is this either puts the Padres into a championship level, obviously not right away because we have this youth movement coming, or it screws them over, or it completely sets back their franchise, basically could waste all of that young talent. But I mean, obviously in that situation, that young talent doesn't really come to fruition. And I don't know if I necessarily see that happening, just like I don't necessarily see Machado struggling. I think he's going to be great for the Padres. And I think the Padres are going to be really good pretty soon here. You were mentioning Fernando Tatis Jr. is just one of the names in the top 100 list
Yeah,
for the
just
Padres. They,
yeah, the biggest name, but there's tons others.
exactly. They have 6 players in the top 50 prospects, 10 players in the top 100. 10 players, 10% of the best prospects in baseball are on the Padres, and you just signed one of the best young players in the game. It's super exciting. Fernando Tatis Jr. is natural shortstop, best shortstop prospect in baseball. Machado's eventually going to move to third base. He just signed a fat contract. He has a little ego to him, so I think maybe he might squeak out another year, maybe two of shortstop. But the fact of the matter is, Machado's far better defensively at third base. It's kind of with his ridiculous arm. I mean, he has that Nolan Arenado mold and fit over at third base that he didn't exactly show in Baltimore. Now, it was a need for him to play shortstop in LA because Corey Seager got hurt. But Machado kind of just metrically, I guess, hasn't shown that he's an elite level defender at shortstop. Whether or not that's because of defensive players around him, blah, 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 whatever, you can argue that, this and that. But the fact is, every time Machado's played third base, he's played elite level defense. He's second among all third basemen with 77 defensive runs saved, and is first in ultimate zone rating, which are a couple of defensive metrics that kind of more the analytics side of baseball uses, with a 45.7 since 2013. Machado's eventually going to end up at third base. He's going to fit well there. He's going to be awesome for the Padres. You got Fernando Tatis Jr. coming up as the number two prospect in baseball, Padres number one. You have Luis Urias as a second base prospect, which is I think is also in the top 50 for the Padres as well. So that's a second baseman and shortstop prospect that are legit in their system. Machado's eventually going to third base, and in a couple years, you mentioned this year possibly having one of the best left sides in the infield in baseball. In a couple years, this
Yeah.
could be one of the best infields in baseball, hands down. I mean, you have Bregman and Correa and Altuve in Houston. That's going to be tough to topple. But if you're looking at any infield right now and have to say who could challenge that, right now it's kind of the Padres. Their youth is super exciting. I think off the bat with this signing, the biggest thing that hurts them is kind of their rotation is pretty eh. They have Mackenzie Gore as the 13th prospect waiting in the wings, but right now, their offense, I think, could look pretty scary this year, and even more as we kind of get going and develop into the season, and their younger prospects start balling out. But from just a standpoint of looking at all the assets and talent they have, I mean, it's really hard to see the Padres going anywhere but up.
Yeah, I mean, a kind of underrated part of their infield as of now, anyway, is Eric Hosmer, who's an elite level defender at first base. So I mean, that kind of just adds even more defensive prowl, I guess, to the Padres
Oh,
infield.
exactly.
So I mean, they could be the most lo they could have the infield on lock. I mean, by the end of the year, with whatever clops they decide to make, whatever shifts they decide to make, yeah, maybe give Machado this year, maybe next year at short, and kind of develop Tatis a little bit, get him kind of integrated into the MLB, and then but eventually you're gonna have to kind of switch them and bring Machado back to third, where he looks like he belongs. I mean, that one throw he had on David Ortiz, or that got was no, I think it was Albert Pujols, the one where he like took 7,000 steps into foul territory and then just unleashed.
Yeah.
I want to see more of that. See more of that Machado. So I mean, I don't think he's gonna. There's really this was a risk move to a degree, but I mean, if you're the Padres, how can you not take it? I mean, you're getting Machado. Arguably, you can make an argument that he's the best player in baseball. The argument's definitely there. Or I
Can't
guess
stop
not
Mike
as long as
Trout.
Mike Trout's alive. I guess I'd probably say the second best, I guess.
Starts and ends with Mike Trout.
Yeah. But and then you got the farm system and stuff. So I mean, this 10-year plan, I guess it could end in 5, depending on what happens. But I mean, it's a good 10-year kind of blueprint that the Padres have put together for their future.
No, absolutely. And I mean, their farm system looks a lot like what the Astros looked like a few years back. The difference is they went out and signed their Jose Altuve,
Yeah.
where the Astros just happened upon the 5 foot wizard's brilliance. I mean, I really think that they're right on that mold of the Astros. They're just kind of waiting for a couple more prospects to break in. You're George Springer, you're Carlos Correa, blah blah blah, and then. Maybe I definitely could see him trading some assets for pitching, and overall it's a risk, but I think the reward far outweighs it when you can add a 26-year-old generational player.
Yeah, and I mean, when you kind of look at it in terms of the reward, there really is little to no risk, pretty much. So I mean, kind of with that being said, we will transition this to another player in this free agency class that I mean, you can't mention Machado without mentioning this player, which is of course Bryce Harper. And with news of Machado's contract, there's been more than a couple of talks about Bryce Harper and what his contract will look like and what that entails. So, I mean, with that being said, I'll kind of let you take it from here.
Yeah, and I mean I don't have a ton to say on Bryce Harper. We've kind of held to this kind of just restraint from predicting and talking a lot about Machado and Harper, and I think just because it's something that it's talked about constantly. Like anytime you can like to kids out there, anything that watch MLB Network like I used to every night, all you're probably hearing is stuff about Machado and Harper, Machado and Harper. So we kind of tried to avoid it, and I don't have a ton to say on it again. But as soon as Machado domino falls, I mean, everyone's attention is immediately all on Harper now. It's kind of zeroed in. A lot of people are thinking Phillies are big time favorites right now. But you got to expect it's the sign, like it's going to happen soon. I mean, spring training's getting going now. Machado, probably part of the reason Machado was like, screw it, I'm taking $300 million from the Padres was because I don't want to sit on the couch waiting around until the middle of March. Now, I don't think that's going to happen with Bryce Harper either, but it kind of kicks the tires a little bit, gets things going, and hopes that Bryce Harper follows Manny Machado and's like, okay, you made your decision, I'm going to make mine. And I think the biggest thing for us to look at this contract from Machado is Bryce Harper is looking at Manny Machado, and Bryce Harper thinks he's a better player than Manny Machado. Whether it is, you could debate with me or not. I don't particularly care to have that debate at this moment. But in Bryce Harper's mind, he is better than Manny Machado. And so guess what happens when you think you're better than another player? You want to get paid more than that other player. So now we kind of have to sit here and wait and see who wants to give Bryce Harper more money than Manny Machado. And as we get down there, I mean, the team, obviously the Phillies are the team that's right there. They're the ones that have been linked to Bryce Harper the entire time. Their owner said they were going to spend stupid money this offseason. Hasn't really happened. So I mean, I'm waiting for the 10-year, $325 million contract for Bryce Harper, matching at least the Giancarlo Stanton extension a few years back. I don't know who's going to offer it to him though. The White Sox said the Padres gave Machado too much money. So what? Bryce Harper wants more, so I mean that puts a damper on the White Sox. And either way, though, we're gonna see an accelerated action here. It's gonna be something fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean the MVP goes a long way in this Bryce Harper
100%.
Machado debate. So I mean having that MVP season, I mean Bryce Harper has probably been, although he's been good, one of the most inconsistent players in baseball throughout his career. I mean
Oh, agreed.
he has super high highs, and although his lows don't make him bad, he's still a really good player when he's at his lows. It's just kind of a crapshoot pretty much on what player you're gonna get season to season. But I mean, I'm hearing, seeing reports that he's gonna get the range, I guess, anywhere from like 320 million to 350 million. I kind of think his mentality was like, yeah, he does think he's better than Manny Machado, but I kind of think he was holding out a little more. He was holding out just to see what Manny Machado was gonna get, and then kind of assess his value and all that, and start picking up talks after that. So I think signing should be coming relatively soon. I mean, like you said, it's not ideal to just be sitting around eating chips on your couch. I mean, although he's not gonna be doing that. But just to not have like a home or a place to be, really, with any organization into the middle of March isn't somewhere you want to be. So I mean, I'm thinking he wants at least the 325 million to match what Giancarlo got. But I'm thinking a team or two will at least give him that 5 million extra and bump it up to 330 million just to make him happy, I guess.
At the end of the day, I'm a little surprised that these signings have taken so long. I think part of it is definitely Harper and Machado holding out, but I do think it's some team is going to give Harper more than Machado. It's kind of just a matter of time, and to whoever does sign Bryce Harper, you have to obviously be hoping you're getting MVP Harper. And while last year's Harper was still he was pretty close to leading the National League in home runs. I don't know if he was tops or not. But average was way down. I mean, it's OPS was still solid, and so I mean, it's average is a little bit of an overrated stat, but you still don't want last year's Harper. You want MVP Harper. You want the Bryce Harper that can come in and polarize your team like a Mike Trout does, who Bryce Harper was so often compared to going early on in his career. I think those comparisons are a little unfair now just because of the stratosphere that Trout has entered. But if you're going to give anybody that much money, I think Bryce Harper's going to make more money than Machado. He's a bigger risk, arguably bigger reward. Machado scares me, attitude or not, scares me less than Harper does. But at the end of the day, I'm taking either one of them, and if they're asking for 300 plus, I'm going to give it to them. I like it really doesn't matter what team you are. Like, if you're in a rebuild, sign these dudes. They're 26 years old, like prime players that you will have for at least 5+ more prime years. And that's assuming they don't play well into their mid-30s, which some superstars have. So, I mean, it's definitely interesting. I'm excited to see where he ends up. I'm tired of waiting.
Yeah, I know. It's annoying to this point, like with all the holdouts and stuff. I guess kind of wrapping it up a little bit. Bryce Harper, please make a decision soon. If you're listening to this, I assume you are listening, but I guess we'll get into our next segment, which is the AAF and kind of the money situation there. Just a little background. They couldn't make payroll after the first week despite great viewership and the product being received well. And they got a $250 million buyout by a Mr. Tom Dundon, a businessman who is very wealthy. He's got super deep pockets. So with that blueprint laid out a little bit, you can take it from here.
Yeah, and so I mean it's pretty disappointing. We talked about it 2 weeks ago or a week ago, I think. A few episodes ago, either way. But the AAF had great ratings. It was received well. It was actually like, wow, this is cool. Like, we're seeing some hard-hitting football after the NFL's done, after college is done. And here we are in week two. And you're afraid you can't make payroll. Maybe you hit the guys with, okay, we're going to be a little late paying you this week, blah, blah, blah. Are these guys going to show up and keep playing football through that? I don't know. And so with that in mind, the AAF went for a bailout. Tom Dundon, as Averjant mentioned, is owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, went into those deep pockets and pulled out $250 million as an investment in the AAF, which immediately made him the new chairman of the league. Rightfully so. That's a lot of money. I don't know what else in the entire planet you're spending $250 million on. Ton of money. Big news is it's not a good sign for the AAF. Just 2 weeks in, you can't play your pay your players. I'm glad that Dundon pulled him out. I think it would be a pretty embarrassing end to the AAF, especially after a solid start. But I don't have much hope for the future prospects of the AAF right now. The week two ratings were not nearly as good as week one, and you just had to get $250 million from one of your owners. I mean, it's a grim outlook right now for the AAF, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, with any startup league, anything like that, the ratings are only going to go down. It's all about just kind of sustaining at least a core fan base. And I think this move kind of is a good thing for the AAF. I mean, not having any huge financial backing coming into this, it was only inevitable that they were going to need a buyout of sorts. I mean, if you look at what happened with the XFL and other startup leagues, that's what happened because they don't have the deep pockets. So Tom Dundy kind of coming in and saving the day is a good, it's a good thing for the AAF. I mean, he's a very successful businessman. All the companies he has are top tier. Everything he's involved in is successful. I mean, he lives within walking distance of Mark Cuban and Jerry Jones. So, I mean, that's a good neighborhood to be in right there. I mean, and he said that if he didn't spend this $250 million on the AAF, he was just going to spend it on another business and run that business. And he said that he did this because he wanted to challenge and he wants it to work as much as the fans do. He's not just going to throw $250 million away, even though he may be able to. It's all about, like, when you're a Tom Dundon, you want your investments to work out and you want to kind of just flip something and make it into something good. So that's why I kind of think it's a good thing for the AAF that Tom Dundon kind of swooped in here.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, absolutely being bailed out and being able to keep playing another week is fantastic. And I would love to vest confidence in the business acumen of Tom Dundon and his ability to turn around the AAF and make it profitable, but I'm still worried. And I will be worried until we're through this full season and we know that we're going to get a repeat. At the end of the day, though, it is definitely a good thing that they're still playing and we still get kind of what could possibly be a solid developmental league for the NFL, almost like a feeder option that so many other sports have, like the G League or like minor league baseball. And I hope this could turn into something like that, maybe even the XFL to a similar extent. I know they would rather compete with the NFL rather than be some type of developmental aspect, but either way, it's good to have them going. I hope that they are successful. One kind of thing with the XFL in mind is I think that this is something huge that the XFL can learn from. I mean, that 2021, I believe, was the expected start of it. Do you remember?
2020, I think it was.
2020. So, yeah, so I think this is huge for them. They get to watch and see where the XFL, where the AAF struggles as they pretty much
they also have their own struggles that they had before when they watched.
100%. And so, I mean, they had something to learn from, but now in today's day and age, almost 20 years later, they can see how it's being received and what goes over well and hopefully learn from it as they sign coaches and start looking at TV deals and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, for a startup league, the first few years are always going to be the hardest and kind of just cementing yourself, establishing a fan base, establishing a product and stuff. So, I mean, this first year, the next year or two are going to be filled with ups and downs for both the AAF and the XFL. What I'm kind of hoping for is a merger of sorts and kind of an NFL backing that this is their developmental league. That'd be huge in kind of keeping those two entities kind of afloat, not necessarily afloat, but existing, I guess I would say. It's a great alternative. I mean, for those that love football, it gives you football when there isn't any NFL, and the product that you've been given is pretty good. So I hope the AAF and the XFL can kind of figure it out a little bit and stay existing, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. Kind of move on. We didn't have a ton to say on it, and at least in my eyes, it was bad news. Ant's looking up. He's Mr.
Yeah,
Brightside,
I'm
glass half
optimistic
full.
on it.
Glass half full this evening. That's fine. That's fine. I support it. I support it. But we'll kind of move on, and I'll just jump into my first big red baller here, just because it kind of relates to what we just talked about. Not the AAF, but the other league that Ant would like to maybe see a merger with, the XFL. Jim Zorn was recently noted to have joined in with the XFL, and probably like it's predicted that he's either going to be in a head coach or GM capacity. And well, I mean, obviously the team that he's going to be involved with will probably be the Seattle team, and so head coach or GM of the Seattle XFL team. Either way, it's really cool. Jim Zorn started the first 8 seasons of the Seahawks franchise. I think it'd be really cool to have Jim Zorn be the head coach or even GM of the XFL team in Seattle. It's going to bring in old Seattle fans that think the XFL might be cool. And I don't know, having a figurehead like this, it's really cool as a Seattle fan myself. And on top of that, I think it's big for the XFL because it's more NFL style backing and background and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's great for the XFL. I think the knock on the XFL, especially with the rollout of the AAF, is kind of like they're kind of disconnected from what football is in the NFL. They're kind of disconnected. They don't have the backing of a Troy Polamalu, Hines Ward, et cetera, to so it's huge for them. I mean, it gives them credibility. If Jim Zorn was gonna go work for them, I mean, why don't what excuse do you have to not go watch, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. That was just pretty exciting for me. You want me to do my bust, or you want to bust into your honorable mentions?
Yeah, I guess I'll run it down. I got two. I guess I got three. Two of them are really quick. The first one, mentioned it a couple episodes ago, the Raiders situation with the field. They're now getting closer to signing a possible 2-year deal with the Oakland Coliseum. Super funny. I mean, they didn't want to be there, but looks like they're going to be there, I guess. I'm expecting a bunch of boos, a bunch of stuff getting thrown on the field and stuff like that. So that'll be interesting to see. And the Miami Marlins new logo, for some reason I never saw it. Not new news. It was released back in November, but doing research on Manny Machado, I stumbled upon it. And it looks pretty cool. So shout out to the Marlins for kind of getting rid of that confusing, disgusting logo that they had before. So hopefully they're moving in the right direction with that. I guess that's the first stage of a rebuild, is a rebrand, I guess.
Yeah, I'm
You
go
go ahead. All right. And then I guess my last kind of honorable mention is the Duke UNC game, which is happening tonight, or as of or right now, actually, as of this recording. Shout out to Zion. He did get hurt. Hopefully he it's not serious. But the average resale tickets for this game were
I saw
$3,296,
that. Oh.
which is crazy if you think about the resale for the Super Bowl that just happened a few weeks ago, which was at $4,656. Kind of looks a little sus for the NCAA right there. your resale tickets for a regular season game is comparable to the biggest game of the year for the NFL. Yeah, a little sus on that. So I guess those are my honorable mentions right there.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you kind of mentioned that the Duke game. Shout out Jaden Dudek, Shoreline Finn, Finn's up, baby. Average Ant knows. He actually showed me that today, and I was blown away. Unfreaking believable. Almost 3 grand for a ticket, dude. Like that's, I'm paying that to go to the Super Bowl for the trip of my life.
Yeah,
I don't know that.
not a what? There's two Wednesday night game,
Yeah, that's
and a Wednesday night
nosebleed.
college game.
Don't get me wrong, college basketball is fun to watch, but 3 grand, whew,
Yeah, Chief, I could watch it. I could watch it on my TV for free.
that's what I said. Moving on from one kind of ridiculous comment to another. Big Red's bus is Colin Cowherd. Once again, you have made your way onto Big Red's bus. I enjoy some of the things you say, but sometimes you make it really hard for me to not think you're an idiot, for me to not hate every word out of your mouth. Today, you had the gall, he had the gall to get on and say that he'd heard in the agent world and the media world rumors and that Russell Wilson's wife, Sierra, doesn't really like Seattle. And so Russell Wilson's wife, Sierra, who by the way, I'll do my Colin Cowherd, who by the way, it is not as big of a star as I think everyone's making her out to be at this point in her career. Like, yes, don't get me wrong, Sierra is Sierra. You hear the name Sierra and you know it.
Yeah, you hear Sierra, you instantly start hearing 1-2-step.
I mean, yes, 100%. But in the last 3 or 4 years, tell me every time you've heard Sierra's name. Tell me whose name has accompanied it. Either Russell Wilson, her wife,
Her husband.
or her husband, excuse me. Or Future making fun of the fact that they were together in Russ. Like, I'm sorry. Sierra does not control Russell Wilson. Colin Cowherd is an idiot for thinking that Russell Wilson is going to want a trade to New York because Sierra wants to go there. Because Seattle's tucked away. It's not as flashy. She doesn't like it. Yes, I think that Russell Wilson is an individual that will do whatever his wife wants to make her happy. I don't think he's going to sacrifice what he has here in Seattle because of Colin Cowherd's reasons of Sierra wants to go there. Russell Wilson is a media dream. The Giants have an offensive coach. Those were some of the big reasons why Russell Wilson could potentially go to New York if the Giants wanted to make a move. Idiotic Colin Cowherd really pissed me off with this one. I know you really pissed off my boy Aiden Wildcat Waite too. Another shout out. That's two for Big Red in one episode. Getting crazy. Getting crazy up in here. But Colin, please. Just stick to doing what you do best, and that's telling us how great people are. Those are your best segments when you get on and pick people that you want to talk about how good they are. You trying to decide predictions and things like that, you sound like an idiot, dude, and I'm over it. Big Red Bust.
Yeah, but I guess it must be a slow day over there at Fox. I guess I won't really touch on it. I mean, you kind of said it, you kind of laid it all out. But what I will touch on is Aiden Wildcat Waite. Shout out to him. Yeah, I saw his tweet. He was really mad. He's really mad about it too. I guess it's kind of a Seahawks fan thing to be naturally mad about this. I mean, I understand it. So I guess kind of with that said, that's kind of all that I got for this episode.
Yeah, no, I'm all set. Aiden was pretty much me seeing that tweet was pretty much why I had to throw this in as a bus. So, yeah, Big Red says stay cooking. Signing off.
Yep, Average Ant also signing off. And speaking of Aiden Waite, Soto Sports Talk is his podcast. If you're into Seattle sports, go ahead and check him out. Average Ant signing off.